The Around the League Podcast loves Priyanka.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the League Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Chris Wessling, Mark Sessler, and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan. Listening to you dance on the Gold Standard's grave over here.
What do you mean, Gold Standard's grave?
You deleted him from Instant Messenger.
Yeah, it was shameful.
You forgot his name?
Talking about our dearly departed producer.
Yeah, no, that's not true at all. That's called
not
having
even cold
fun.
Yet.
Again, this is the second time today that I'm having to explain this to my colleagues. That is absurdist humor that I'm working with that maybe is not connecting with the guys I work with.
I like to call it subhuman behavior.
All right, so welcome to Friday's show, the Around the League Podcast. World Cup has begun. People are excited. Gold Standard, our now former erstwhile producer. Obviously, I connected the dots. His last day was the day before the World Cup began. So we understand why he ended the way he ended. We will always remember Zach Goldman, but we have to move forward.
Three of us will always remember.
And we will. Well, the three of you will. So we got a nice show today. The World Cup's going on, but we're still about the American football first and foremost. Although we respect the, quote, beautiful game.
We do, because we have so many international listeners. We've received some crazy numbers of the people that listen to us overseas. So
yes, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Denmark.
Denmark's a big one.
Yeah.
Thank you, Denmark.
Over 40% of our listeners overseas.
And the seven guys listening in China for some reason? Well, you know, that's a pretty nice thing that you did.
Well, we were thinking this links nicely with the potential that we might have to go to one of these NFL games in London this
right.
season.
Right. Oh, 16% of the people listening to this are from the UK, so we got to start up a movement to go cover those games.
Usually we're trying to watch out for the shadowy league figures, but I want announcement for the shadowy league figures. Listen. We have a great reach into other nations. We can be your ambassadors if you let us. Send us to Europe. Send us to Australia.
Denmark would be.
Send us to Denmark. We will make the game bigger, and we will make it truly the beautiful game, the NFL.
I would love to go to Denmark. I've read like a couple of Bill Bryson books where he spends time in Denmark. They just seem like very nice people.
Who wouldn't want to go?
They have their priorities
Sounds
in order.
Great.
What is the
Sweden is big.
Swedish people. What is Denmark? What do you call them there?
Danish.
Danish? Dutch. Oh, that's great.
Well, you are starting from scratch.
If you're drunk in Denmark and out of order, the police don't harass you. They help you back into your home.
All right.
By the way, I grew up in Weybridge in Surrey, England.
Crikey.
And I have not been back since, so shadowy league figure,
there
per diem, full paid flight, let's go.
All right, it's on Greg, the boss, to figure this out. Big show today, big show, folks. You're going to enjoy it. We're going to do more talk about our Making the Leap series on NFL. Do we have a vanity URL?
We do.
A little insider talk. It is NFL.com/...
Making the Leap.
Makes a lot of sense. We're going to get into it, a AFC South wide receiver that we're going to get into a little later in the show. We're going to do our segment that we started, I guess it was earlier this week or maybe last week. I can't remember anything anymore. Rookie Whispers. I'm going to talk about some rookies that have got some things going on. They're doing some work in OTAs and mini camps, and that's something to keep an eye on, who can make instant impacts in 2014. But before we do that, we're going to do the news. And before we get to the news, we're going to meet our new producer. He is a man that if you listen to NFL.com podcasts, you are already aware of his name and who he is. Behind the glass, now and hopefully forever, ending the curse of the producer for the ATL podcast. We go through more than Spinal Tap goes through drummers. He is TD.
What's going on, guys?
TD, of course.
Sounds good.
And we have a lot of shared listenership between our show and the Dave Damashek football program, better known as Black Tie, on DDFP. TD is going to be our new producer. So Take it away, TD. What do you think, buddy?
What's going on, guys? I got to say, I'm excited to take this new project on. Obviously, with the international goals you guys have, that's, you know, right up my alley.
World domination.
We're working on it. That's awesome. But I'll finally get to find out if, you know, Rosie actually stands when you guys say he stands on his other seat. So see if that happens.
And this isn't truly your I was going to say virgin voyage. Let's go with maiden voyage.
Yeah.
Your maiden voyage for the ATL podcast. You've guest produced a couple times before, filling in, but now you're our full-time guy. And I will say one thing, TD, and beware on social media. A lot of people grew attached to the gold standard. So there's probably going to be some period where you're going to have to win them over, but people said the same thing about the gold standard when he replaced K-Rich.
Yeah,
so I remember
that.
I got a lot of faith in TD.
I will say this. A couple of people in here that were a little bit, you know, a little bit worried when the gold standard first took over. But, yeah, definitely. You know, the PR side of me says, you know, I can't, you know, I'm not even going to try to fill the cleats, you know, gold standard's cleats. But on the flip side of things, it's, I almost feel like how J.J. Abrams must have felt having to deal with both Star Trek and Star Wars. So,
okay.
I'm ready to go, guys.
You are definitely the first producer to refer to your PR angle.
I'm a PR voice and, you know, that whole demeanor. I got it ready
to
go.
That will be just about enough Star Trek references on this podcast.
Take that to Elliot Harrison's podcast in the future.
12th time is a charm from the producer front.
So, yes, you're probably in great danger, just a heads up, because of what's happened to every one of our producers. But we hope this is a long and fruitful partnership. And why don't we get it going, TD? Let's do some news. We talked about on Wednesday's podcast, Kristen Michael potentially eating into Marshawn Lynch's workload. And we wondered, you know, how that potentially would sit with Lynch if that were to happen. Now, some interesting news from NFL media insider Ian Rappaport, who reported Thursday that Lynch has quietly been seeking a new contract, according to sources informed of the situation. And he could stay away from mandatory minicamp in Seattle next week, which is very interesting. Obviously, he's stayed away from OTAs this year. Not unusual for Lynch. That's kind of been his MO. But if he's missing minicamp, something's up. And according to Mr. Rappaport, it is going back to money, as most things in life do.
Yeah, good luck with that. He has no leverage. He signed a contract only 2 years ago, and it pays him almost $8 million a year, which is pretty good for a running back. And they don't want to set the precedent of paying guys halfway into the contract. And, oh, by the way, 3 months after he signed that last contract, he got a DUI. I don't think they're going to want to step back up to the plate to just give him more money. I think he has no leverage in this.
It's pretty telling that a guy that has averaged 300 carries a year for the past 3 years and certainly is the centerpiece of that offense last season that helped them win a Super Bowl at that position has no leverage.
Can't blame him for trying. If he is trying to cash in one more time, he's entering the decline phase, entering his age 28 season, which is when running backs start to decline. Can't blame him for trying, but it really doesn't mean anything if he's absent from a minicamp.
Well, you can fine him, so you lose a little money. In the end, in these cases, they wind up not fining the guy because they don't want to get Marshawn Lynch mad over $70,000, which is roughly what they can fine him. You know, what I'm interested in, is this going to be just one of those disposable summer stories that we forget about quickly? Or could we be sitting in this studio, you know, a couple weeks into August and still talking about this, that he hasn't showed up to training camp and it's becoming a bit of a distraction or whatever you want to call it, a drain on them and something that we continue to talk about?
It's not the worst thing for the Seahawks, frankly, because this is a guy that you don't want to overwork at any point up before week one anyways. So if he misses some training camp or even a preseason game or two.
He's a running back.
Right.
As long as he's there week one, he's fine.
Plus, we got Kristen Michael. Sessler's making the leap, boy. Forget that 100 carry projection. Let's throw that up to 150. Maybe Lynch better watch out.
Doesn't get
his job back.
How about Kristen Michael takes advantage of what looks like an opportunity here with Lynch potentially sitting out? Now you drop the teen in the spelling of his name. Go to Chris Michael. While the starter's sitting out, now you got all the momentum surging towards a 300 carry season.
That's what it's all based around, Dan.
Yes.
Changing the name.
Two first names, though. You never really trust those guys either. So that's a
never trust a two first name guy. I agree. Moving forward, the book is now closed on Colin Kaepernick's Miami investigation from an alleged April incident involving the Niners quarterback. The Miami-Dade State Attorney's Office announced Thursday that prosecutors will not bring charges against Kaepernick, Niners wide receiver Quentin Patton, or Seattle Seahawks receiver Ricardo Lockett, who were all named in the incident report filed April 4th. A spokesman for the Miami-Dade PD made it very clear as well that the case was not dropped. There was never a case to start with. This was always just an investigation. Obviously, there wasn't enough fire to go with the smoke. Kaepernick is cleared, and we move on.
We move on.
If you're someone who covers football, you are praying as we move into what is the dark period before the season and training camp begins, that every one of these players stays out of law's way. Just go and read books. Be quiet. Sit underneath trees. Please stay out of the news.
More than any other... Reading books is a great way to relax.
Sitting underneath trees. That's the vision of an NFL player's offseason.
Go into the forest.
Yeah.
Moving on, gentlemen. One half of the famed Williams Wall in Minnesota is moving to Seattle. NFL media insider Ian Rappaport reports defensive tackle Kevin Williams has agreed to terms with the Seahawks on a one-year deal. According to a source informed of his plans, he chose the Seahawks, the defending Super Bowl champions, over the Patriots and a return to the Vikings. Williams obviously he's a veteran now. He's been in the game for over a decade, I'd say, right?
Yes.
12 years.
But still an effective starter last year, getting a little long in the tooth, but this could be a nice bargain signing by the Seahawks, no?
Reminiscent of two guys last year, Carlos Dansby and Darryl Smith, who didn't sign until very late in the offseason and had Pro Bowl caliber seasons.
That's a really good comparison. And it also reminded me of some of the Seahawks signings from last season. Even though Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett are much younger in their careers, the Seahawks saw value in them sitting out on the open market. I think they made signings at a lowered rate that they didn't expect to. And that's what happened with Williams. He sat out there long enough. They thought he can help them. He should be able to really improve their defensive tackle rotation. They probably won't have to start. That's a tough team up front.
This is a team that when they watched Red Bryant walk out the door too, everyone we talked to at the Super Bowl mentioned him and a few others as one of the leaders in that locker room. So you're adding a veteran presence, which is not a team that's desperate for leaders, but he adds that angle. But what does long in the tooth mean? I don't understand what that means. That was reverberating through my mind.
As you age.
Really?
Or do your gums just recede?
I don't know. I always found it weird that your fingernails grow when you're dead. That always freaked me out. Maybe it's tied in somewhere.
I like that your face stays the same, but your ears and nose grow throughout your life.
It's very disheartening.
Bad stuff is going to happen to all of us. That's basically the end game here. Good news, gentlemen. We have a Hard Knocks team for 2014. Announced Thursday. The Atlanta Falcons. Get excited, folks. They have agreed to take part in the 9th season of the acclaimed HBO documentary series. This will be the Falcons' first appearance on the show and the first NFC team since 2008. Also interesting, NFL put in new rules last year where you were able to duck the show and not been forced to be on the show. Falcons were a team that could have avoided the show because they were in the playoffs in one of the last 2 years, but they chose to be on the show. So the Falcons wanted to be a part of the project, and now they are.
Goes back to ownership. Arthur Blank wanted to be on the show, so they're on the show. I doubt Thomas Dimitroff or Mike Smith were jumping up and down, hey, let's do some Hard Knocks. But, you know, they want to sell a new stadium in Atlanta. They want to sell a few more tickets. Team that surprisingly has struggled to sell tickets at times, despite winning a lot of games lately.
This is one of those issues where you can see people who follow football versus the older, out-of-touch columnists who are calling this the Falcons signed up for a circus.
Yeah, shut up. Right.
Like,
yeah,
it really kept the Bengals from getting to the playoffs last year.
Right.
Nothing embarrassed the Bengals out of last year's show.
And by the way, while we're on the subject of just people that are out of touch that work in the sports media, we were talking about this downstairs. If you do not know soccer and you're just checking in for the World Cup, which I think all of us are, we're kind of just casual fans. TD behind the glass is a legit soccer fan. But don't pretend you're an expert now for the next month.
And very tedious.
Act like all of a sudden, a brilliant header by Maradona. It's like, you don't know what's happening. So just enjoy it, but don't pontificate on something you don't know about.
thank you, generic NFL scribe, for your penetrating analysis of that
right angle. You don't have to share every thought. You can keep some thoughts to yourself.
And that's more a societal problem in general you bring up, Greg. Yeah, you don't have to share everything, okay? Of course, this comes from the guy that was tweeting about Alan Thicke's infomercials earlier today. So I guess we're just an oversharing society.
Or the guy that boldly, without asking anyone around him, if this would be the case, announced Croatia as ATL's team of the year.
Question mark.
Don't agree.
Question mark. But they're losers. They lost. So.
Absurdist humor.
Slightly sexier.
Absurdist humor. Thank you.
Slightly sexier than Croatia, I think, are the Atlanta Falcons. But, you know, a lot
nice
of the knock
mark.
On the Falcons is that they're boring, right? They play in a boring stadium, blah, blah, blah.
That's your knock.
Well, no, I'm not the only one that feels that way. Well,
the knock from the people.
No.
Hate the dome.
I think they are regarded as a bit of a dull outfit. But what HBO's series does every year is it can take a team that you feel one way about and completely flip it. And I think that's the benefit for the Falcons is, I don't know, I guess out of the gate I'm not that interested in Mike Smith, Matt Ryan, or really a lot of players on this team, but I know that HBO is going to make me see some of the assistants and some of these guys a different way.
Who's more interesting than Thomas Dimitroff among NFL executives?
I like Dimitroff, I didn't name him, but I agree, he's... He's vegan, he's intriguing, he's different, you know. But
rides
we know
a
all
motorcycle,
that.
Extreme
we know
sports,
all that, though, don't we?
And his hair.
Not the rest of the country. Who knows general managers
it's
in this
It's pointed up towards the middle,
well,
his
yeah.
hair.
The hair, definitely, you know, dad trying too hard situation going on. Why are we leading? I saw, Greg, you wrote about it. I liked you did your points of excitement about the show. But you did something that I've also seen in other places where it's like one of the things that makes Dimitroff an interesting guy is that he's a vegan. How does that play for the cameras?
It doesn't
in the football world.
Nice vegetables.
All I
no,
mean
but it's
is,
an interesting dichotomy with football guys.
That's
most,
right.
Most guys right. are, you know, meat-eating cavemen.
He sticks out in an NFL of groupthink and boring sound bites. He's always interesting.
Okay.
And he's not afraid to be a little different.
Mark Sessler.
So back off.
Mark Sessler, former vegan. You get the final word.
I think it's interesting the two guys, him and along with Scott Pioli, that came from a Patriots organization that wouldn't do this in 10,000 years, are, I think that's your point. They were signed up for this because the owner wanted to do it back in, what, 2008? And that coaching staff won the argument. It didn't happen. The owner's getting his way this time around.
And it'll be great.
It'll be fine. It's always a great show.
For the last eight teams. I know you said last word.
I know.
But who am I to listen?
You try to give somebody the last word. Rosenthal can't let it happen.
Four of the last eight teams have been on the show, have made the playoffs. There's a, you know,
that means nothing.
I think we got to send these cameras to the nightlife in Atlanta, some of the strip clubs, see what's going on there. And then we get a little Brian Cox and Mike Tice action in this. The most entertaining assistant coaches in the league.
True last word here.
Yes.
Dimitroff and Scott Pioli, stars of one of my favorite NFL books, War Room by Michael Holley, which Greg did not like as much, but I thought was a fascinating look into that front office, that all those guys that came out of the Belichick tree.
Mark, the last word.
Let's just move on.
Okay, there you go. All right, let's move on to
I chime in with the last word?
Yeah, go ahead.
There you go.
All right, just it's a pet peeve of mine. Cause
I was
at
the gold standard, by the way. Go ahead, go. TD.
I was at NFL Films, where I started my NFL career, doing the first Bengals run. And it's, a lot of people say HBO show. Granted, it is on HBO,
okay,
but it's good folks at NFL Films that are in those camps like the NFL players, and they make it happen. So.
Okay.
Just like a little production note. That's all it is.
There with
a pound
TD.
Cake from NFL Films will show up at his door next week.
TD company shill.
No, that's good. It is fair to say because they are the ones that are, you know, HBO gets the glory.
Which is
it's not right.
Which is why people are criticizing the circus coming to town. It is made by the promotional arm of the NFL. It is basically Pravda of the NFL. I mean, I love NFL Films.
Nice reference.
But yes. I mean, they're not going to put them in a bad light.
Mark, the final word.
Again, can we please wage on to the next segment of this show?
Thank you. Our next Making the Leap candidate, number 21 on this list, a wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans, Justin Hunter. This one is a little different because we did the write-up. We had the two scientists, Chris Wessling and Greg Rosenthal, going back and forth. You could read it right now on the Around the League page on Thursday. Once again, this sometimes happens. It's like two kids caught in the middle of like a marriage that is dissolving. Mark Sessler and I just watching the scientists bicker. about this player. So now we're going to open up the floor, let him get it out there. Justin Hunter, ready to make the leap. Or is he? Go ahead, John.
I think we agree that he's ready to make the leap. It's got your byline on it, Chris Wesseling. We disagree maybe on the level of belief, but to me, Hunter fits perfectly the profile of the guy of a guy that struggled at points as a rookie, was very unrefined, and is ready to see a huge uptick in stats, much like Michael Floyd, who we had on our list last year, much like Alshon Jeffrey, who was on our list last year. He reminds me of those guys in that he's not as polished as he is just physically talented, and I think he's going to have a great opportunity there.
What I find the most interesting about Justin Hunter is that he fits two profiles. The successful one that you mentioned and the Darius Haywood Bay, a Muhammad Massaqua, Jerome Simpson profile where he has highlight reel plays interspersed with six or seven drops in a row.
Simpson didn't play for 4 years in the NFL practically, his first 3 or 4 years.
Right.
He showed enough talent that he's already making plays as a rookie, Justin Hunter. Game-winning plays, big touchdowns. I know you watch them too, Mark.
Yeah, I'm not a scientist. You know, I may be. I'm like a student that walks in with a lab coat and refills your supplies in the in the lab. But I watched them because you guys were the bickering didn't start on Thursday. The bickering began last weekend. I was roving around the city and I'm watching Twitter and Greg and Wes are going back and forth. So I got home. I said I'm just gonna watch this guy's plays to get my own take, because I can't figure out what's going on with this guy. I like to look at making the leap guys at where their ceiling plays to begin with, and I think he is far more interesting than Muhammad Massaqua. But you're right, the lower plays and the drops, there's just inconsistency. Quarters would go by where he would baffle you, but some of the acrobatic catches he made were fascinating, and his position coach said that if the Titans were to ever have the chance to make the playoffs, he's the reason we'd get there.
In the same conversation, the position coach said, Nate Washington is a pro's pro, a stud, and the leader of our wide receiver corps. So I think Kenny Britt spent 5 years trying to knock Nate Washington off. I don't know that Justin Hunter's going to be able to do it.
He doesn't necessarily need to, because most teams play three wide receivers most of the time. That's one of the reasons I felt so strong about Hunter, is that he played 350 snaps last year. It's guaranteed he's going to double that. If he's lucky, he might almost triple that. He had pretty good production for that little time on the field last year. And yes, he's going to drop some passes. Dwayne Bowe drops a lot of passes. T.O. drops a lot of passes. Brandon Marshall's dropped a lot of passes his whole career. I'm not putting Justin Hunter there, but I'm saying that doesn't necessarily stop you from producing. He might be a little better fantasy player than he is in reality, but that talent that he has when he makes those plays jumps off the screen.
There's no doubt he's a stud talent. He drew comparisons to A.J. Green and Randy Moss at Tennessee. I guess my issue is those guys you mentioned, Brandon Marshall with drops, Terrell Owens, they make plays too on balls that are difficult catches. And Justin Hunter can high point a ball. If he's jumping, he's making a play. But a lot of plays where he has to reach down to get the ball or reach to the side or there's a defender in the area, I watched, and more often than not, Justin Hunter gets his hands on a ball and he just doesn't reel it in.
He struggled coming back to make catches. I saw that over and over. But he struggled with drops in college as well.
Yes.
Do you feel like that issue can't be taught off, that can't be corrected?
It's a good question, because I don't always think drop rate is something that's predictable. You know, Roddy White, a couple of years ago, led the NFL in drops. The next year had just one. But then you have guys like Troy Williamson, who was drafted number 7 overall, couldn't catch. He just couldn't catch, and if you're a wide receiver, you have to be able to do it.
Let me throw out a few over-unders here and see what you gentlemen think. Justin Hunter, 70 receptions, 2014.
Way under.
Yeah, I'd go under. He's just not that kind of receiver. He's not a possession guy. Even at his best, he's going to be just catching long passes.
800 yards, over-under.
That's a good spot to pick him, but I'm definitely going over if I'm going making the leap.
He better be, yeah.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
I think he'll be a 900, 1,000-yard type of receiver.
I'm going under.
6 TDs.
Over.
I might go over for that one.
Yeah, he got 4 last year, yeah. 350 snaps. Yeah.
So I put it through the machine, 47 catches, 814 yards, and 7 touchdowns.
I'll give you a good comparison. A guy who was never an absolute stud, but the analysts didn't like it. The metrics crowd didn't like him as much. Chris Chambers made a lot of spectacular catches, but always had a catch rate like below 55-50%.
It sounds like your suggestion that he'll be a better fantasy guy than he is maybe an actual player this season will meet out.
Yeah, that it all, and it's part of the situation. Tennessee, even bad offenses, find 3,500 yards of passing, and I just don't see where else it's
the
coming
Browns
from. I think they're
going to
get
more than 4,000 yards last year with three different quarterbacks.
And what happens when Bishop Sankey steps on Hunter's ankle in week 3?
Oh,
Wait, no. We've got a Sessler.
We got a Sessler.
No, I'm just
sad Sessler.
Throwing it out there situationally. You never know.
What's wrong with you?
I am just asking a question.
Yeah, but when you doom players to serious injury.
I didn't say this will happen. Just listen.
It's weird because you're such an optimistic guy, nicest guy in the office, all this stuff. And then when we put on the headphones, you just are wishing doom on half the NFL.
He can't control the feelings that bubble up from inside
you.
Of him.
Thank you.
TD, do you see that the man is he's difficult to read, Mark Sessler. Always has been.
He's an injury geyser.
I might have to turn my body language gaze on him.
That's one of TD's great talents from over on the DDFP. He's able to read body language. What are you seeing right now, by the way?
Right now, what I'm seeing from Mark and what I'm seeing from the guys, I'm seeing guys are into the show. It's weird actually being here doing the production, you know. And I see Greg's looking up Google or some stuff. I don't know what he's really doing on there. I can see his screen. And Dan, you're same old guy. You know?
All right, that's good.
All right. Cool.
Nice. Good body language
analysis
from TD. All right, gentlemen. So let's move on. So OTAs and minicamp going on right now. What is it? 7 teams this week had mandatory minicamp, and OTAs are continuing. Let's go through some teams, go through some cities, and we'll pick out some rookies and that are making some waves, I guess good or bad, in a segment we like to call Rookie
Whispers.
It's kind of creepy. You know? A little bit creepy.
A little creepy.
People have let us know that keeps them up at night. The whispers.
We like to keep our listeners on their toes and also up at night. We like to just, like, just a terrible experience for the people listening to the show. That's what we go for. Anyway, why don't we go around the room a little bit? We're all, you know, surfing the web all day. I sound like a 64-year-old grandfather.
Surfing the web.
The world.
Thanks,
wide
Al
web.
Gore.
The internet.
Surfing the web.
On your Google machine.
Looking for...
Riding on the old information superhighway.
You've got mail. We're doing our research, so we're coming across some interesting nuggets. Who wants to jump in with something that they've seen or read in the past few days? Chris Wessling raises his hand like a good boy.
D. Ford, Chiefs outside linebacker, drafted 23rd overall. It's beginning to look like he should have been drafted in the top 10. Drawing comparisons to Von Miller and Hall of Famer Derek Thomas, a first step that has been described as scary.
So this is one of those shorts and t-shirt stories. It's tough to get Wes to buy in. We're sitting downstairs and he's like a fly swatter just knocking down everyone's ideas for a post because he's not buying the summer hype. And I'm with you for the most part. But this time you're buying. What's the difference with this story?
I think when you see it from all corners of the organization, he's getting hype from the general manager, the coach, teammates. Multiple teammates are just, you know, guys like Tamba Ali. He's a threat to Tamba Ali's snaps, and Ali's comparing him to Derek Thomas.
And it's interesting. This was a team that a lot of us pegged would go after a wide receiver. They really need one, and that offense needs a game changer. And yet they went out and drafted a position that is relatively stocked with talent. So you're right. From head to toe, the team and the whole front office must have said, we can't pass on this guy.
Should be a fun pass rush to watch. They fell off at the end of last year. That's one of the big questions for me about that division. Which Chiefs defense is it? The one from the first half or the second half? Because if those three guys, Justin Houston, Tamba Ali, and D. Ford, are all rolling at the same time, that's about as good a group as there is in the NFL.
For a top three? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Let's throw out another name.
Whispers.
I'm going to go to Arizona and pick out John Brown. Wide receiver out of Pittsburgh State. And
when Pittsburgh State drops the H at the end, a weird move.
Right, because it's not necessarily the one you're thinking of.
Yeah, come on. You agree, though.
It threw me for a loop when I saw it in the post later on, certain that I had made a spelling mistake, but I had not. Another guy drawing favorable comparisons to an established starter, this time to T.Y. Hilton, because their dimensions are exactly the same, and they both have identical 4.34 speed, and they have the same coach in Bruce Arians in terms of a guy that set Hilton free. They are lining him up, and people are saying that he's just been blowing the doors off. That team, for me, I am excited to watch them because you've got Ellington out of the backfield, a really fast guy. Then they've added Ted Ginn. You got John Brown here, I think is going to see snaps. And, oh, by the way, Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. Interesting team in the NFC West.
It's not your fault, Mark, but this has Peter King stink all over it.
Why is that?
Why is that?
Peter King touted him as a guy you have to draft in your late rounds of your fantasy draft. We know the Peter King stink. I mean, he's got Jabbar Gaffney, Eddie Royal,
Danny Werfel.
I mean, if Peter King advises you to draft him, he's not going to be good.
A time will come where Chris Wessling and Peter King will be on a big mountaintop with Game of Thrones swords just going at each other.
You're going to want to put your money on me.
I got a feeling I would.
You know Peter King's not a fantasy guy when he's touting a number four wide receiver or number three who, at his best, if John Brown exceeds all expectations, he's getting, what, 650 yards? I mean, he's not a guy you're starting in your fantasy league. He's going to be an interesting guy to help the Cardinals have one of the best receiver groups in the league, but
Mark, do you really
don't draft him, please.
Do you really think he's getting more snaps than Ted Ginn?
I think that's the obstacle to him, but I guess I'm not looking just this season.
Right.
Down the road, he is absolutely Ginn's replacement if he is what they think he is.
That's
and then
fair.
If you're the number three receiver in a passing offense, I don't have a problem with
they
that.
They have four wide receivers on the field a lot, and I don't know if Ginn's going to be on the field every snap. I mean, they don't use their tight ends to catch passes. They like spreading
it
out.
It's not like Ginn is Victor Cruz standing in his way.
And keep that window open for my boy,
fair.
Carson Palmer.
Fair point.
And, Greg, I think after last season, Ted Ginn did some things. You gained a little bit of begrudging respect for Mr. Ginn.
Oh, I loved Ginn last yes. year. Yeah, I think we all did.
Let me throw a name out there.
I have a feeling I know which team
yes.
he's going to play for.
I think you guys know that I am a New York Jets fan, and I am excited about what's going on in the secondary. For years, this team has struggled to identify strong safety play. They've had great cornerbacks in recent years, or maybe last year is not a good example, but they have failed to address safety really ever since Jim Leonard broke his leg a couple of years back. Now they got Calvin Pryor, and Calvin Pryor, of course, was taken with their first pick in 19th overall, and we have ESPN's Lewis Riddick Lewis Riddick said that the, and this is Mark Sessler's writing, you know this is Sessler prose, the hammer-dropping run stuffer has been, quote, special, and, you know, now we're going to get to see him in pads next month, and you're going to see how he really hits. This guy's an enforcer. Rex Ryan is going to fall in love with him, and this could be the guy that finally gives a new identity to the secondary post-Revis, and I'm all in.
I was on the Dave Damashek football program yesterday, and we dropped our all-AFC East team. TD's first love, Damashek. But you already like us better, right? Come on.
I wouldn't say Damashek was the first love. The pod, you know, I mean.
All right.
First job.
That's fair. We were looking around for the all-AFC East team at safety. We had no other choices but to go with Calvin Pryor, partly because of the summer hype, largely because there wasn't many options after Devin McCourty. But the reason I love this choice, Dan, is Rex Ryan's great with safeties. Mm. I mean,
tasty,
if you just look at his history, he's done a great job coaching up safety. Anyone that coaches up Jim Leonard enough to the point that you actually think that was a change in the organization when he left, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and Rich Cimini reported, I think it was Cimini that reported, that when the Ravens, who picked directly before the Jets, passed on Pryor, the Jets war room just exploded because they had fallen in love with him prior to the draft. He was the guy that they had targeted if they were going to pick a defender, and now they have him, and we get to see what Rex can do with a guy that could be a stud talent.
Speaking of war rooms exploding,
whispers.
When the
yes.
Eagles traded up to draft Jordan Matthews in the second round, there were high fives exchanged up and down the hallways.
You're falling for Matthews too this summer.
I am pulling for Jordan Matthews.
Let's hear it. You know, go out of order.
Well, they, you know.
No, I like it.
There's no order, is there?
Free-flowing conversation.
One of the local writers tweeted early this week that Jordan Matthews has been the most impressive wide receiver in Eagles offseason practices, which says a lot about him, but also isn't surprising in the fact that Macklin's coming back from ACL surgery. Riley Cooper's talent is... He's Riley Cooper. He's a little bit underwhelming as far as your best wide receiver. So, but I think, you know, Jordan Matthews also a film junkie, weight room junkie, and holds the SEC record for receptions and receiving yards. He has just about everything you want: size, speed, production.
And he'll be playing out of the slot, which is a nice little spot to be in that offense. Those are the guys. Maybe it just seems that way. It seems like rookies have a better time breaking into the league right away if they're playing on the inside, not the outside.
Plus, you also have to keep in mind what Matthews has going for him, which is remote-controlled cars, zipping all over the field, really getting ahead of the game while everyone else is basically in the caveman stages. Chip Kelly has revolutionized the game with a couple, you know, C batteries. Congratulations, buddy.
Dan has gone to full troll mode wow. with the Eagles fan base. He hates you all and
That's
hates your team.
Not you. Not you guys.
Can I drop one last name?
Yeah.
I think we know Ryan Shazier is making Pittsburgh's defense faster. We've gone down that road. But on offense, little 5'7", 3/4", Dree Archer. Wesleyan and I.
Was he a Humpty Dumpty? Sessler's making a little motion here.
I do not buy this business about him being a miniature Jamal Charles because he didn't have a college season where he had more than 14 touches on offense. But we did, Chris and I, watch some of his kick return action downstairs, and this guy can fly. Pittsburgh hasn't had that like absolute electric gadget type player in a while, and I think that he.
He might see one or two offensive touches
a game.
I think special teams. You know, the fantasy guys have been kind of saying this guy's not that big of a deal. And that's true. He's not going to be a big fantasy thing. But the comparison to Mel Gray, one of the most exciting football players of the early to mid-90s, great kickoff return.
I like an NFL player that is shorter than I am.
Wes and Sessler, is it okay if Greg chimes in with a name?
Oh, had you not picked one yet at all?
That's all right. Hey, I'm enjoying the show.
We're going to hear about this.
It's great.
Please, roll off a couple names.
Well, no, I just have one. While you're talking about all the big names, John Brown and Dree Archer, why don't we talk about a little guy named Johnny Manziel at some point, wrapped up his off season this week at mandatory minicamp. So he's done. What do we take from his first off season? When I listened to the reports out of Cleveland, seems like struggled a little bit in the ways that you expect rookies to struggle, going through his reads, was kind of locked in on his first read, and Brian Hoyer still ahead. Are you at all worried, for instance, Chris Wesseling, that Hoyer could still keep that lead?
No.
Of course, Chris Wesseling has put a pair of softball pants on the line.
That is nylon, that is rubber, that is composite parts, that is metal zipper, all going into Wessling's digestive tract if Brian Hoyer is starting week one.
Will Chris Wesseling eat his softball pants?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that Brian Hoyer goes through his progressions faster than Johnny Manziel.
I agree.
That's a June story. Wait till August when the live bullets are flying. Johnny Manziel's escaping sacks while Hoyer is a sitting duck back.
And Petten, by the way, laid it out there as clear as possible that he said that Hoyer is ahead, but the exact wording was insurmountable. This is not an insurmountable situation for Manziel. So it's still wide open.
Yeah, he's not even taking 11-on-11 snaps. I mean, Brian Hoyer is coming back from ACL surgery, which Chris always points out, and it's a great point. I mean, he's not even taking the first team snaps because he's not healthy enough.
I like that the Browns are manufacturing drama to a situation that really doesn't have much.
Mark, I know you went back this week and had a little Hoyer party in the office.
Well, no, I wanted just to watch his stuff, and I think that it's easy to forget that he himself is a project with not a lot of starts under his belt on any level, and he is a smarter player than any quarterback they had last season. I think that's why he stuck out. When you're competing for the heart of the fan base against Brandon Whedon and Jason Campbell, it's not hard. He moved the ball. He does go through his reads. That's something that's the positive, but there's nothing special about Brian Hoyer necessarily on tape. Johnny Manziel, as soon as he starts making those plays, I don't care what he does in practice, to be honest. This is a guy that I think when you put him out in the field, We're just going to see what he does. And it's like the fans are never going to settle for Brian Hoyer being the quarterback for the first 8 weeks of the season.
What about, Mark, your thoughts and the rest of the gentlemen in the room on my observation earlier today that Brian Hoyer is a dead ringer for alt-rock star live lead singer Ed Kowalczyk?
It's fair. If you were to put...
Your references are getting almost as old as Wrestling.
That is an aged reference.
I was a big Live fan.
Yeah,
really?
I got into Live as well. Throwing Copper was an excellent album.
My brother Nick, that's his favorite band of all time.
Live toured with Counting Crows for two summers and did... They packed it in.
That's a loathsome tour.
Listen, back when Dan and I were, much younger.
Much younger. They rocked it at Jones Beach in New York. And
keep in mind,
people still talk about that.
This was during my mailman era, so my taste in music might not have been evolutionary yet.
When Adam Duritz of Counting Crows came out on stage when Live was playing The Dolphin's Cry, I don't think anybody. There was not a dry eye in the house.
None. I could
when you hear the dolphins cry.
Live is one step above the band that did Closing Time.
That will be
fine. Semisonic, that's another good band.
Come on, Craig.
Craig.
He said that will be fine.
By the way, that lead singer came from a great band called Trip Shakespeare.
That's very true.
Closing Time, by the way, and this is apt for you, Dan, is about a woman giving birth. It's about a baby leaving the womb, and it's called Closing Time on that experience.
Which is also what Lightning Crashes was about, and we tie it all together on the Around the League podcast. That's it. We got to get out on that.
It's a good thing they don't track listenership throughout the podcast, because everyone has turned it off by now.
No way.
90s alt-rock was the best. All right, that's
Life
it.
Lessons.
That's it for today's show. TD, welcome aboard. We're very happy to have you, and we don't want you to go away, so please don't go.
I'm here, guys. I'm here for the long haul.
All right, good. That is so good to hear, actually. That's it for Friday's show. We will be back on Monday, so hang in there. Enjoy your weekends, everybody. Watch plenty of football and whatever you want to do. I don't care what you do. Stay out of trouble. That's it for today's show. Signing off for the Mailman, the Sizzler, the Boss, and TD behind the glass. Until Monday. All right, how about like a sensitive one? Wait, it's still got to be a whisper.
Whisper.